Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. Mind power and then some other power. Let's call it personal prevention power, personal power and understanding what you as an individual can do to make a difference in your life, perhaps the lives of loved ones. I mean, it just applies to so many areas. We're going to be discussing a topic that I think is so relevant today. Actually, it has always been relevant, but I think that in today's world, we have to be very much aware that we've got to be awake. We have to be attentive. We have to have a positioning of personal responsibility that's going to empower us as individuals to know that we can make a difference not only in our own well-being, but in the well-being of those that we love. My guest today is Martine Edhard Clow, and her book is The Take Charge Patient. Now, what we're going to be talking about is how you can get the best medical care possible. Now, I know you might be shaking your head and saying, oh, Donna, everything is such a mess today. How can this even be possibly attained? Well, we're going to be chatting with Martine, and I think you're going to be surprised at some of the things that she's going to say. Some of them you might not be surprised at, but I guarantee you, you'll walk away more informed, and you're definitely going to want to have this book in your library. Martine, welcome
Donna,
to
thank
the show.
You so much for having me on.
Well, you know, I found when I went through your book, in fact, I was reviewing certain portions of it today before we went on air, and I have nothing but the deepest respect and regard for someone that has gone through a living hell of your own because of misdiagnosis by the medical profession. Now, this is not slamming stuff. This is fact of what you went through. Would you share your story with my audience?
Sure. I was 6 months into writing the Take Charge Patient and done with all the 200 interviews of physicians, nurses, et cetera, and basic outline done, and I developed a severe chronic pain condition. And I saw 11 doctors of differing specialties and went through 15 procedures and tests and was prescribed 22 medications and received 10 misdiagnoses. And about a year into this, I found my own diagnosis and the surgeon to heal me. And I found my own diagnosis through a New York Times article, which described a woman with hidden hernias with nerves passing through the hole. And the surgeon, luckily for me, was at a teaching hospital here in Los Angeles, and she did three-hour surgery, and I've been pain-free for the last year and a half.
When you hear a story like this, when I read your story, I mean, immediately we go into the mindset, oh, my God, this is awful. This is just the way, you know, I can tell this story, that story, the other story. But your positioning, I think, is such an intelligent one. Instead of doing a bashing job, painting the whole medical profession with a paintbrush of, oh, this is, they're just not competent, they're not capable, blah, blah, you don't do that. What you say is we basically need to take these many of very sincere, caring people who have studied for years off of pedestals, and we have to take a positioning of responsibility for ourselves. Now, that is a 180-degree shift from the way people were taught and educated, especially, I think, maybe it started as early as the 50s. I'm not sure. But the 60s, the 70s, even the 80s, there was this myth about the medical arena that just now is going through a lot of crumble, tumble, and toss out perspectives on the part of many individuals. You had this hit you after you had been so deeply involved in doing research on the Take Charge patient. I mean, for you to go through this, to go through all of this stuff, what was the biggest shift in your thinking after your research that you had done and then the personal experience you went through?
I think I realized that physicians are human beings, and I realized that medicine isn't a cookbook. And because medicine has become so specialized, meaning that so many physicians have gone into specialties, that in my case, when I kept seeing these doctors of different specialties, I mean, upon reflection, of course, they were looking at their specialty rather than at the whole picture. And granted, hernias in women, especially with nerve involvement, is rare. So I think 90% of the physicians I saw absolutely did their best and wanted to help me, but simply couldn't. And I feel incredibly lucky that I was able to find my own diagnosis. But I think that I realized that patients have to work in partnership with their medical providers rather than, as you said, having them on a pedestal, having them be gods, and that puts us in a passive, subservient position. I got up to speed with my what I practiced in my book, you know, about 3-4 months into the process, and decided that I had to change how I acted as a patient. And especially as a chronic pain patient, where, you know, chronic pain patients can end up, you know, in suffering with chronic pain for a lifetime with simply pain management medications. I didn't want to end up like that, so I did my end and hopefully met the physicians halfway.
Mm-hmm. And something that I would like to bring out here, there are, again, so many people that enter into the medical field because they sincerely care and they sincerely want to make a difference. And this has to do with nurses. This has to do with anyone in homeopathy, you know, in the natural world of medicine. But again, there is this blindsight, and as you say, the specialization, and much of the medical school processing has cut away from what you'd call a general practitioner, someone that, you know, that really can look at the person as a whole picture. And we need the specialists. It's not that it's not valuable, but when you have all of these different people with all of these different perceptions, and they're not working together, they're not
exactly
working as a team, then you as a patient, and especially if you're in a lot of pain like you were because you had a muscle tear in your C-section site, you'd had a C-section, you had a particular type of hernia, and you had an additional hernia, which was called a belly button hernia. Now, these are things a lot of people will not experience. So when we're discussing this about you, it is to make people who are listening today aware of the fact that you must be proactive. And that is, you know, what I think you bring out so well in your book, because you bring out the point, doctors seeing patients every day, trying to stay up to par with the latest technology, continuing their education. My goodness, they hardly have time to even have a life as a human being.
It's really true.
It is very difficult. This has been something that any physician, if you look at history, a good physician rarely had very much of a private life. And they were on call, they'd make house calls. I mean, this is just the way it was for a long, long time. And often their health suffered quite severely. Happened with nurses, overworked, this type of thing.
Right.
And you would have thought with technology today that would have been eliminated to a degree. But I can tell people right now, you have nurses that are working in hospitals, 12-hour shifts.
3 days in a row.
8-hour, 12-hour shifts. That's
yes,
the thing.
And longer. 3 days in a row, too. I mean,
yes.
And many states don't have nurse-to-patient ratio laws, such as in California, it's mm-hmm. five patients to one. But in certain states around the country, for my last book, I interviewed so many nurses who told me that they were caring sometimes for 10 patients at a time. That is just unthinkable.
Well, some of them have floors. In some places, there might be 30 patients that are on a floor in certain environments, and they're supposed to give attention to it. That's not possible.
Right.
That just isn't really, you can try, but people are not assembly line pieces of metal, thank you very much.
Right.
I mean, you sometimes just, a nurse, a doctor wants to take the time. They really care. They want to take the time. They want to hold that patient's hand. They want to touch their shoulder. They want to say, look, I know, let's talk for a minute. Let me find out from you what's going on. And sometimes there are emotional things that when they find out about that, maybe they can bring in a minister or whatever to let that person have a place to vent. Or there might be things going on with family. There might be all kinds of stuff that is happening in this person's life. This is a human being that you have in front of you.
Right.
And it's very tough in today's world because there has been a detachment process that has evolved. So in your book, you give instruction. And I really use the word sincerely, instruction. You have to be a take charge patient. And it's like listening to a teacher in a classroom. You must be here at 7 o'clock in the morning for the class. Thank you very much. You must be on time. This is the process. And I know that most of us are not even going to want to hear this, but it's true.
And well, I think if patients want to increase the quality of their medical care
mm-hmm.
and increase the quality of the time with their medical providers, then reaching for the book and reading it or reading certain sections of it, I think they'll want to.
Oh, absolutely. But I like what you say in your book. You as an individual, you want to be a take-charge person. You want to be able to go anywhere in the world and get medical treatment because you have your medical history, your health file, your medical record, a list if you take medication. You want to have a list of that medication. You want a list if you have allergies to medication. I think of my husband. He cannot take penicillin if it's given to him as a shot, but he can if it's given to him in a pill. Why? Don't ask him. He doesn't know. All he knows is that he learned this when he was in the military. Why does the body do what it does? Who knows?
Right. It's often
like
doctors don't know
bottle.
Either.
Yeah, and they go, how does it do that? They don't know. They honestly don't know. So if you have this information, this is so important. I've got a friend, and bless her soul, she's in her 80s, and for the past 15 years, she carries around with her a little memory stick. She's got all of her medical records on that memory stick, and she has her husband's records on a memory stick.
Very smart. Very smart.
She had a situation 3 years ago. She's ending up in this little tiny hospital in New Mexico somewhere, critical situation, and she hands them the memory stick. They were dumbfounded. They had a computer, fortunately.
I'm sure they were.
They were just dumbfounded. She said, here are my medical records. They said, you are kidding us. No, here they are. And because of her medical records, they knew they couldn't handle what was going on with her, and so they called an ambulance, and they had to send her to a bigger hospital. But if she hadn't had those medical records with her, they wouldn't have known what to do. It would
That's
have taken
right.
hours, maybe days.
You know, I interviewed one physician for the book of many, and she was telling me that sometimes she will get patients who will, you know, have moved to Los Angeles from out of state, and they have no medical records, no list of medications, and they come in saying, I have cancer of, you know, whatever part of the body or whatever kind mm-hmm. of cancer it is, and know nothing else. So she has to start again with all mm-hmm. the tests. I mean, it's so simple if you can just have your medical records, whether on a memory stick or hard copy or have access to them on a cloud, which for medical records, or there are apps for medical records. or even just carrying them, you know, hard copy to a copy of mm-hmm. them to your new physician. It will cut through so much red tape.
Absolutely. Now, I have had patients that of various levels that have gone to doctors, and they'll say, Donna, I can't get my records. I say, yes, you can. Yes, you can. By
law,
your legal
right.
have a right to those records. And so go ahead and get a copy. I don't care if they've got a foot and a half. You know, if you have to pay for it, great. Maybe you volunteer to go in and make the copies yourself. However
right.
it works. But you get those records.
Yes.
Because it makes a difference. And if someone hasn't really been ill, and they may say, oh, I don't need that stuff. I mean, gee whiz, this happened to me 35 years ago. I know I'm guilty of that. And some of the records that, you know, a few years back may or may not be around because the physician isn't around. And that is something people need to remember, too.
Right.
Sometimes doctors retire. Sometimes many of them do. And if they're an older physician, you need to be able to get your records at the time that you have it. If you're with a medical group and that physician leaves that medical group, you need to find out where your records are so that you can get a copy of those records.
Or if your insurance changes and the physician you've been seeing is no longer on your new insurance plan. Let's say you change jobs, they have a different insurance plan, a different, you know, set of providers that you can choose from. It's important mm-hmm. to get a copy of your medical record at the time that you see a physician.
I agree. Well, your book goes into a lot of detail on how to create your own file and how to create a file for loved ones. And there are so many people in my audience. I know they have ended up being caretakers. They have people in their family maybe that are getting elderly, and they can see the handwriting on the wall, and they mm-hmm. go, my goodness, what do I do? How can I be a supporter for them? But before we get into the caregiver side, I want to address a question that I know just about everybody is concerned with. How can you choose the best doctor for oneself? This is a challenge that is utterly phenomenal. How do you go about doing this?
Well, before you start even making efforts to choose a doctor, think about what kind of a doctor you want to be working with. I mean, hopefully, if you're choosing a PCP, a primary care physician, this will be for a lifetime or for many years that you're going to have a long-term relationship. So think about what kind of a doctor you want to be interacting with. Do you want a physician who is less communicative, maybe more to the point, or do you want a doctor who will partner with you and discuss things with you and respect you, look you in the eye? There are a whole bunch of things you need to think about. Then you can start by, if you happen to know a physician that you have confidence in and you respect and you know is a good doctor, you can start there and ask for a couple of names. And usually good doctors will know some other good doctors. And then you go to family, friends, colleagues, and ask them for referrals for who they see, who they like, and you'll start cross-referencing names. Certain names will start popping up. You can also call, let's say you know a physician, call that physician's office and ask to speak to the RN. What physician does he or she see? Who does the family see? Start compiling names, and you'll see certain physicians that'll pop up. And then you can do a little research on the Internet if you're Internet savvy, and there's other alternatives if you're not. Find out. Normally, a physician will have a website. You can go onto their website and find out if they're board certified in their specialty, what medical school they went to. If they're, you can find other information on other websites about whether there are any legal infractions. And you can go onto the AMA website, and under the patient area, there's Physician Finder, and you can find out all sorts of information. Also, health grades and the Joint Commission have information on physicians. So, and if you aren't Internet savvy, you can simply call up the physician's office and say, would you please either mail me or fax me or email me a copy of the physician's CV? I'd like to see their bio. And then you can look at, everything you want to know about that physician. Mm-hmm. And once you make an appointment for a consultation, you come prepared with a list of questions about what you would like to have covered. And you're assessing in that initial appointment, do I have a personal connection with that physician? Because the relationship between you as the patient and that physician is the cornerstone of quality health care. And a good relationship involves effective communication. So if a doctor's not a good communicator, there is more of a risk for medical errors on both parts of the patient and the physician. And there's more of a risk for less quality of care.
Mm-hmm. And you have some fabulous stories in here about how people discovered certain things and they learned it later. And again, I think it's very important to remember that physicians are human beings. They're not like data in Star Trek. I mean,
right.
It's, you know, you've got to realize, or the hologram doctor that they often portrayed, there has to be that empathy, because many times a good physician, not only will they have had some experience behind them, but they develop a rapport with the patient, and they'll look at that patient and they'll just understand something, and they'll say, you know, I just have this feeling, and they use their intuition.
Yes,
along
they
with
do.
Their logic. A good doctor, just like a good mechanic, a good artist, they incorporate all of their senses when they're working with a patient. They really, really do. But I also liked a story that you had, and it was by Alan Jasper, who is a doctor. He said, doctors are human beings, too. I remember a patient, after seeing me for an office visit, she went back to her primary physician and said, I never want to see that doctor again. The day before I had seen her, I just buried my mother. So this
Isn't that amazing?
He was going through a grieving process.
Sure.
So how in the world is he going to be able to see a patient and give her the compassionate attention that he perhaps would have given her otherwise when he's just gone through a funeral with a member of his family?
Right. I mean, it's like what you were saying and what I've said in my book is that doctors are human beings, and
mm-hmm.
they can have bad days and good days. It's important to recognize that maybe that doctor has been up all night with a baby, or maybe they've had a fight with their spouse that morning. I mean, it's important to, you know, assess the situation, give them a second chance. I mean, obviously, you don't want to be stuck in a relationship with a physician where they're not treating you respectfully or you're not getting your needs met. But I think, as you said, that patients will sometimes look at physicians as machines and that they have all the answers. They're supposed to be perfect in every way, and that just isn't realistic. It's not fair to the physicians, and it's not fair to us as patients.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So it's a whole different genre we're developing. I liked your chapter on developing relationships with the staff of doctors. I know that there have been family emergencies where there's been critical care given, and I can tell you I have a great deal of appreciation and respect for staff.
Yes,
and
so do I.
Yes, because I can remember going in, and I was prepared. I said, this is information. You have to know these are members of family that will be coming in. I wrote everything out for them so that they would have it, because I didn't want them, because the individual was in critical care. And I said, you need to know that these people, it's okay for them to come in. And I think I surprised them, because
I'm sure you did.
that kind of efficiency. And then I went back and I talked to the various people. I mean, these are people in the emergency section of the hospital. They're not just dealing with one person. They might have 20, 30 people all of a sudden show up out of nowhere.
Right.
And they've got to be on duty. And then after the emergency side, then people are moved into a hospital portion, but it is that developing of association with those people on staff. And I loved what you said. Give them a thank you note.
Right.
These people are working long hours. Nurses, practitioners of different types, they have their protocols, and whether you might agree with them or not, don't treat them like a piece of dirt. Don't be arrogant.
That's
be
right.
An arrogant
I mean,
idiot.
Out of goodwill alone, or because you know you're going to need them at some point in the future. I mean, if
mm-hmm.
you think about how overwhelmed all these medical professionals are, I mean, they're all overwhelmed. Everybody from the physician down to the nurses down to the front desk staff are multitasking at a level that is extreme. And if you think about how many patients actually express appreciation to these people, it's very, very few. And if you could possibly stand out to some of these staff members and express appreciation, a thank you note, you know, handmade cookies, whatever it is. I mean, I did it in my own situation when I was trying to get in for the dynamic high-resolution MRI when I had my hernia and the muscle tear in my C-section area. I was told I wouldn't be able to get in to see this surgeon for a month. So I, you know, very honestly and sincerely was telling the doctor's nurse my story, and I was tearful, and I said, is there any way you could possibly get me in sooner? And I asked her if she would put me on a cancellation list. I was planning on calling back in a few days, but sure enough, she called me back and said she had a cancellation, and could I get in the next 3 days? Well, I brought her cookies, because I appreciated what she had done for me so much, but also because I knew that I would probably be needing her in the future, and I wanted to establish a good relationship with her.
You know, that, I think, is just a note of appreciation, a call of appreciation, a thank you. It's amazing when you have situations of health issues, little things like that. There are so many people that are never thanked. Courtesy is something, an appreciation, that is valued by everyone.
Right.
I really think it is. And people, I don't believe, are made aware of that. And that is so very significant. And I like your statement about you've got to be honest with the doctor. Boy, is this a big one.
Yes. I
know when I went in to see a physician recently for my with my husband, the doctor, something came up, and I said, I have a question or two. And after I asked him certain questions, and he turned to my husband, he said, this is why I like to have the spouses in here. You would never bring this stuff up. And, you know, you need an advocate. And that's one of the things that you cover very, very well in your book.
Oh, thank you.
And you had a friend, and I'll call her Francie just for to pull out a name because the first initial.
Her name is Fran.
Oh, isn't that wonderful? I just love it when I can do that. So anyway, we'll call her Fran. And Fran didn't want any money or anything else.
Oh, nothing,
said, I need some help. And you really did because you were the patient. You had done a lot on getting your records and being prepared with the physicians, and she had a medical background.
Yes, she did. She had managed medical practices for many years.
So here was someone. You were very fortunate, and you tell the full story in your book and how she worked with you, and that is important. And you need to have an advocate that is not going to be arrogant and rude. You need an advocate that is going to really understand the environment. And let's say you've got someone that's in the hospital for a long term, then they, like a rest home or something like this, nursing facility, and or a critical situation physically, and they've got to be in the hospital for a while. Well, making sure the patient doesn't get bed sores and being attentive. And you bring out so many wonderful points.
Oh, thank you.
In your book, and you go into a section on specialists. Now, by the way, we're just about running out of time. Could you stay with me for an additional 15 minutes?
Sure, I'd be happy to.
Wonderful, Martine. This is such an important subject. I have had personal situations come up. My guest, her real story, she goes to in depth in her book of the Take Charge Patient. She's going to stay with me for some extra time, and we're going to go into some areas of subject matter that I think are vitally important. And so we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to be discussing some various components of information, legal health documents, telemedicine, telehealth. Oh, yes, it's going that way. It's really nothing new. Concierge doctors, have you ever heard of them? Well, we're going to be discussing that and a few other things as well. So don't go away, because this is something that is vital to you and or someone that you love. Know that this can make a difference in your life. Donna Sebo here with Martine. We'll be back and teach you some more about how you can be a take charge patient. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. My guest is Martine Ehrenclothe, and I want you to know that her book, The Take Charge Patient, How You Can Get the Best Medical Care, you can check out her website at thetakechargepatient.com. But we're going to cover three topics before in this next quarter hour. Concierge doctors. Now, this is something you expect to hear about a hotel. The concierge doctors? Martine, how has this term evolved? What does it mean?
It means that a doctor will charge a yearly fee and keep his or her practice down to a low number of patients so they have more time for patients and they can talk to patients on their cell phone, they can make house calls, and they can make visits to the hospital. They'll charge a yearly fee anywhere from $1,000 and up, and many physicians that I interviewed who either are concierge doctors exclusively or their practice has a concierge component. So you pay this extra money and you get the kind of medical care, according to these physicians, that they were able to practice 40 years ago. Mm-hmm. More personal attention. And, you know, now if you go into a hospital, you're never guaranteed if your physician is going to be visiting you in the hospital. You know, maybe they have a partner in the practice who does all the hospital visits, or a hospitalist or intensivist will be seeing you in the practice. Mm-hmm. So these physicians say that they're more dedicated to patients and want to provide the kind of medical care in that, you know, for example, Marcus Welby.
Well, I'll tell you what, it is deeply needed, and we have a huge, huge amount of family care physicians that are retiring, and we don't have enough to replace those that are leaving the medical environment.
Right.
And I think that that's one of the biggest steps in preventative health care, where if you have a primary care provider, and this is something I had never even heard of before I saw your book.
Oh, really?
I had never heard of the concierge physician, and I thought, gee whiz, if you were able to pay $1,000 a year, and now I know you say it can go up to $5,000, they'll work with you, I'm sure. And that's another thing that you have in your book, is how to negotiate with physicians and doctors' offices, and it works. And I'm telling you, with the cost of medical care, folks, you need to be able to get this book, and if nothing else, read that chapter. Find out what you can do, because there are a lot of people that are having terrible times. I actually know of a person that got hit with a $40,000 medical bill, and they had to leave the state because they couldn't deal with it.
Oh,
and if they had
yikes.
Known what to do because of the situation, they wouldn't be in what I call the hiding perspective. That
right.
Sounds like something out of off of a television soap opera. But I'm serious. These are things that people are doing, and they don't know what their options are. And that's what your book, The Take Charge Patient, offers. And also, I really like the idea of the patient-centered medical home. I haven't heard that either. I mean, I hear of these nursing homes or whatever, but care, we have such a huge amount of people that are living to be in their 80s, 90s, even over 100. And the cost of care, I had a guest on a couple of months ago, $10,000 a month.
Oh,
where someone
my goodness.
To stay in their home, $10,000 a month is that's the beginning of facilities in D.C. And I heard that number, and I thought, how in the name of heaven are people even going to be able to afford this? So the options that you're giving here show me that there are people in the medical community that see the need, and they're saying, okay, how can we do this so we can help those that need help?
It's true, and the Obama administration is actually promoting patient-centered care and the accountable care organizations that focus on patient-centered medical homes, which I think is great because then the patient is seen by a primary care physician and any other ancillary physicians, and they all communicate together. They all have electronic medical records, so they can communicate together, and everybody is in it together for the care and prevention of disease for the patient. And mm-hmm. the patient is expected to see that physician and the ancillary physicians for a lifetime or many years. I mean, I think it's a wonderful thing that's starting to happen.
Well, it's the mind-body-spirit connection, and that's very important because you can't just treat an arm.
Right.
You might have a broken arm. You know, it's just like, okay, this is the arm, and the rest of the body, we don't care. Because there are so many situations in the human body that can occur that if you are not mindful of the systemic operations, you're going to have a problem with medications. You're going to have a problem with recuperation capacities. You need to treat the whole package. And when you have a team like that, which is optimum, that's when you've got a winning combination. Now let's dip into, and you give more details about that in your book. Let's talk about telemedicine and telehealth. You make a comment about this, and this is relatively new, just like a concierge doctor is relatively new. It's like something old coming back in a new costume. Telemedicine and telehealth. Because of technology, physicians in different parts of the world have been able, on a very tiny level, to utilize this, but it's becoming bigger and bigger and bigger. How is this going to impact our lives?
It's a big question, but I think that, let's say when we're talking about physicians, they are able to communicate with one another and provide information, let's say for a surgery, a physician from across the world can actually be involved in the surgery across the world because of telemedicine, because of video, because of all our ways of communicating now via technology. And the great thing about it is for people who live in, you know, real rural areas, and no matter where they are all over the world, they'll get access to more health information, and they'll get access to more health care. I mean, some of the exciting things is that for example, the iPhone, there are attachments for an ultrasound. Let's say a woman in a rural part of the world who is out in the country and has very little access to medical care, but goes to a medical clinic that's near her home, and she's pregnant, and there's an attachment for an iPhone that is for an ultrasound. I mean, this is just amazing. There's attachments for iPhones that can diagnose ear infections. So let's say you're not able to go into your physician's office. Let's say you're traveling somewhere across the world and you think you have an ear infection, but you don't want to go to the clinic that's in the area where you are. Well, if you have an iPhone and you have an access to whatever attachment needs to happen, you can send images to your physician, and that physician can help you over the internet. I mean, it is, or satellite connection. It's just so amazing what's happening.
Telehealth, you know, just what you're talking about. You have the mHealth, which is mobile mm-hmm. health, which is something you've just mentioned. You've got the ePatient, And I was really impressed by a section in this particular chapter on telemedicine and telehealth about Dave D. Broncart, who's known as ePatient Dave.
Yes.
ePatient? I've never heard of an ePatient.
E stands for Empowered Patient. And Dave truly has been and is now lecturing all over the world. An empowered patient. He had stage 4 kidney cancer, and he got himself up to speed and empowered and well-informed about what his options were and used all his connections via Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, and connections with, you know, specialists all over the world. And he is, you know, now living and surviving and has lived far beyond the anticipated 24 weeks.
The essentiality to create legal health documents now. Boy,
yes.
This is such a big one. I'm telling you, it is huge. And lots of times people think, oh, well, I did that. My husband and I were even talking about this recently. Well, we've got to update certain documents. And you lay this all out, because you say you need a durable power of attorney for health care, you need a living will, you need a do not resuscitate, it's called a DNR, you need to be aware of palliative
care and hospice
and
care.
Hospice, and making sure that your doctor knows about certain things. But it has gotten to a point, and you really have to have these things laid out, because if you don't, you may find that against your wishes regarding yourself or maybe a loved one, they may have to go through additional care or be kept alive by machines, and that's not desired or wanted. And if
right.
you don't have this in there, depending on where you are,
I think every person will have their own wishes about how they want to be treated in certain
mm-hmm.
situations. And if you don't spell that out when you're healthy and in mint condition, you are going to end up in a situation that you may not want.
Right.
And your loved ones will be put in a position of having to make decisions for you that you may not want. They may not want to be making those kind of decisions for you. And it's part of being a take charge patient to execute some of these legal documents so you get what you want and you have some control over what happens to you, either in an emergency situation or end-of-life issues.
Mm-hmm. This is so important. Now, I know that we are running out of time. I do want my listeners to know that in your book, The Take Charge Patient, you have suggestions about forms. There are forms that are on your website, thetakechargepatient.com,
yes.
And you give resources in the back of your book that I just think are incredible.
Oh, thank you.
You go into how to ask about medications, questions to ask your pharmacist, and I agree with you 1,000% on getting to know your pharmacist, working with a pharmacist, asking questions, always being thoughtful and courteous, because they are the chemists. Lots of doctors don't even have a clue about the chemical interactions of certain things.
It's really true.
Will. And it's not a put-down of the doctor. I mean, the doctor, see, I think so many times we expect somebody to be super colossal, and because they got a degree, they know it all. They don't. They don't.
It's the pharmacists who really know medication.
They know that chemical interaction. They make assessments. What's your weight? Are you having a reaction? What else are you taking? What foods should you eat or should you not eat with food? It is a phenomenal, an incredible amount of information. And it's, if you want to know about the medicine, talk to the pharmacist. Be honest, no games playing, and they will tell you, this will be, you know, they'll tell you about how something can be extremely toxic to you.
Yep.
So don't be afraid. I really think, Martine, that your book, The Take Charge Patient, is just phenomenal in what you've gone through.
Thank you.
And as much pain and suffering you went through, and I know that that had to be just excruciating, but man, you've walked the walk. So your book is coming from personal experience as well as from interviews with doctors and nurses and various practitioners. And I just think you've done an incredible job. So for those of you listening, go get the Take Charge Patient. Check it out, because this is something that you can utilize as a tool. You don't have to read the whole thing from beginning to end like I did, but have a highlighter in your hand. Use that highlighter. Talk about it with those that you love. Take an interest in yourself. There's a section in here on preventative care. You need to be aware this is your life. This is something that affects the lives of the people that you love. You may need a stranger that you're going to be able to share this information with that they didn't have a clue about. Pass it on. Martine, Erin Kluth, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me on.
It's been a delight. Check out our website, thetakechargepatient.com. Use it. You don't want to lose it. Use it.
Thank you so much.
We're taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com. That's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N. And find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007. That's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are open, 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Well, that's if you want to call in and chat with me. And all I need from you is your first name or initial. That's all. And then you're welcome to ask me after I give you my mental impression. You're welcome to ask me a question about anything that you like. Now, I wanted to share a story with you today about a woman who actually stopped a runaway school bus. When you hear these stories, it's amazing what people can do when emergencies come up. Now, this is about a mom. Her name is Rhonda Carlson, and she was doing what she did every day. She was waiting at the school bus stop. She had her daughters with her, and it was brisk and cold, and she said the bus that comes every morning, sure enough, it's coming down the street. However, that bus doesn't stop. That's right. It keeps on going. Well, that's really strange. One of her daughters said, "Mom, something isn't right with the bus driver." Well, there was a neighbor that was also around, and they said, "I'll call 911." And she began to run. This is just instinctive. Rhonda just began to run. And she was concerned because, think about it, a bus with no driver, once it starts picking up speed and it's a huge mass of weight, it gets a little faster, a little faster. And buses don't typically go all that fast. Well, it just was unbelievable. Now, because it was in a residential area, it was going pretty slow, about 10, 15 miles an hour. But she guesstimated that the bus had picked up speed and was going 20 miles an hour. She finally managed to catch up with the bus. And she got to the front door, and as she was running, she noticed the bus driver was slumped over the wheel. His whole body was going through severe spasms, and there were about 50 children on this bus. And she kept thinking, okay, it's going to head into something, and these children could be injured. And she managed to get the attention of the kids, saying, open the door, open the door. And she pointed, she knew where the lever was inside the bus. And the boy was able to get to that lever, open it, and open the door for her, and she gets on board. She didn't know where the emergency brake was on the bus. But what she did, she managed to position her body over the driver's body so she could hit the brake. And she got the bus, she got it into park, shut off the engine. The driver had had a seizure. They got him off to the hospital because an ambulance had responded very quickly. And another school bus was sent immediately to take the kids to school. And there were moms and dads. And when they found out what had happened, and the word spread pretty quickly, they were just amazed at what she had done. And Rhonda had a chance to stop by the classroom of the little boy that had pulled the lever. And she said, I want to personally thank you for what you did, because you were able to open the door. I was able to get in and to stop the bus. And everybody was just amazed at what she accomplished. And she said, I just did what I had to do. And one of the things that she learned from this is many times you think you cannot do something, but if a situation arises to test you, often you can. You can surpass your own belief systems in yourself. She said, hey, I'm just a mom that did what she felt she had to do. And 50 kids and a bus driver were very grateful for all of that. I wanted to share that story with you because I think it is significant. We all have parts of ourselves that are much greater than we ever realized. And sometimes, when life tests us, we're shown how capable we really are. And I think that that is significant. Well, tomorrow we are going to be having a Best of Donna. If you missed my interview, Hildegard of Bingen, that was on last week, by golly, tune in. Matthew Fox is the author of that fabulous book. This woman is incredible. She existed over 800 years ago, and what she did was awesome. She is a Renaissance woman of Renaissance women. So I think you will enjoy it if you missed it last week. Tomorrow, not tomorrow, but on a Thursday, we're going to be talking about how you can take back your time and with the holidays. Oh, do you sometimes just look at the end of the day and say, I can't believe the whole day has just evaporated. I feel like I just got up and now it's time for me to go to bed and I got to get up and do something else again tomorrow. Take a deep breath. There are ways that you can gain some time for yourself. Sherry McGuire is going to be with me. And then on Friday, I have two surprise guests. One is in England, and the other one is in California in the Hollywood area, a famous movie actress and also a physician. So tomorrow I'll tell, or on Thursday I'll tell you more. But the surprise guests, well, you'll have to tune in to find out more about them on Friday. I'm telling you, the time just goes by like the wind, and I'm so delighted that you have been able to join me today. It is so important for us to realize that we can make choices in our lives, and education is part of that process of understanding what choices we can make. If you're not educated, if you're not aware, how are you going to know? You're not. I mean, how many decisions have I made in my life? I didn't have a clue about what were my options. By golly, yeah, the more you can hear different people's positionings and perspectives, sometimes it's confusing, it's overwhelming. But if you take the time to really examine, you'll find out what you may have in options. And before we close out quickly, do you know what a FRAM is? Well, this is a new word with the Internet IQ level. FRAM is, well, it's about spam email that's sent to you by friends and family. I didn't have a clue about that. Spam, I know all about. FRAM? Well, new words are being developed every day. So that's one, and I've got some others that I'll share with you every once in a while. New words that people are utilizing to communicate a concept and an idea. Remember always that you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Take charge. This is your life. Be the best you can be. You're going to find that investment in yourself is one of the finest things that you can ever do, because it is through that, again, you will know what option you have in front of you. Donna Sebo here. Have a magnificent day or evening wherever you are on this beautiful planet of ours, and we'll be talking with you here tomorrow, a rerun of a show, and then I'll be back in studio on Thursday. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.